This is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Good morning, sports fans. It's a pleasure to have you here for the big Thursday show. As we begin here on Locks of the Week Radio, as we start us off going into the long, long weekend, as we begin to see what's up on the football schedule, as we look into the trap games, but more importantly, we look at what has happened in the baseball postseason this year, and we look ahead a little to the World Series. Notice the little pep in my voice. You know, I'll be honest with you, I really thought that about an hour ago that I was going to really come in, either be really fired up, angry out of my wit, or I was going to be depressed to all hell, but that has not happened. There was a sense of finality in what happened over the course of yesterday's baseball game in the National League Championship Series. Philadelphia Phillies hosting the LA Dodgers. Phillies win 10-4, a game that was not close. And really, a lot of problems came to roost, I think, for the Dodgers, as the season closed itself out. But more importantly, the Phillies win the National League. They are now going to the World Series again. This will be the first time a National League team has gone to back-to-back World Series since the Braves did, from what I remember. Yeah, it would have to be the first time a National League team has advanced to back-to-back World Series since the Atlanta Braves did that very thing in 1995 and 1996. Since then, it had been Marlins, it had been Padres, Braves again, Mets, Diamondbacks, Giants, Marlins, again, Cardinals, Astros, Cardinals again, and then in 2007, the Rockies, 2008, it was the Phils, and now we have the Phillies doing it again. So it's the first time in about a decade, no, not a decade, excuse me, in about 15 years, that a National League team has gone to back-to-back World Series. That's pretty remarkable. In this era of parity across all sports, that is a very tremendous accomplishment by the Philadelphia Phillies. And I think my impression of the Phillies, now that they've won the championship, and I can put all my bitterness away, my personal vendettas can go by the wayside. What I have come to find out about the Phillies, as I've noted a couple of days ago, is that their rotation, excuse me, their lineup is really one of the best I've ever seen. And I've only lived a short life. I haven't even reached 30 yet. But this rotation is really a lot of fun. It was great to watch throughout the year. If you were an impartial fan, I was not an impartial fan, so obviously I didn't really get into it as much as other people did. But they really performed when it mattered most. When they needed the runs, when they were trying to get that hit with guys on base, they did it. And last night, they did it almost every single time. You get a guy on base, boom, home run. You get a couple guys on base, walks, boom, home run. I could not believe that they had capitalized on almost 100% of their scoring opportunities. It was the most bizarre game I've ever seen in my life. But it's over. So before we look ahead towards the World Series, because number one, the Yankees still have to play. It's not over yet. They still got to get the win. They got to get the W tonight at Angel Stadium. It's mostly a formality, I would imagine. But you never hold out hope for anybody until it's officially over. So we'll get into what happens there in the World Series in a minute. So the Phillies win. They are a tremendous team from a hitting standpoint. I just don't think that they're that great. I mean, I know this may sound like sour grapes for me, but I don't think their pitching is that good. They've managed to out-pitch the Dodgers, but the Dodgers' pitching completely imploded. And if you don't believe me, I mean, you give up 9-10 runs, as the Phillies won 10-4 last night. But you give up 10 runs, 9 runs, 11 runs in 3 games of this series. You can't tell me that the pitchers were pitching at all, because they weren't. It was pathetic. absolutely ridiculous. And that's what we've come to see from the Dodger pitching staff. So I don't know if the Phillies are going to hold up against the Yankees. This is a very, very legitimate lineup. Phillies are a legitimate lineup. But the Yankees have better pitching, assuming they get there, of course, than the Phillies do. And the bullpen, don't make me laugh. I know Manson had a good run. He had a good series. I know Durbin was fine. I know that Lidge pitched less crappy than he usually does. But this bullpen has not changed. I am sorry. This is the same bullpen from before. So I think you know where I'm going to stand on this. If the Phillies and Yankees meet, it still depends on tonight. All Yankees. You know, I just hate the Phillies so much now. I do want to congratulate, though. I do want to congratulate them, though, on winning the NL pennant. I really mean that. I know that I hate this team's guts, but they have absolutely earned their berth in the World Series. So, from everyone here in the city, congratulations from me, Dave Medina. I hope they have a good run in the World Series. I mean, I wouldn't want it to be a terrible series. So, good luck to the Phillies, and good luck to the winner of the ALCS, whoever that may be. All right, so that puts a capper on Philly. Let's get into the Dodgers post-mortem. This is going to be fun. What an embarrassing performance for a single team in a league championship series. Especially when you consider that this team really had a lot of expectations riding on their pitching staff, which completely failed. I have never seen a pitching staff be so thoroughly and completely beaten around as I did. And it was everybody. It was the starters getting their ass kicked. It was the middle relief getting their ass kicked. It was the closers getting their ass kicked. Everybody got their ass kicked! I am just so embarrassed to even be a Dodgers fan. I'm serious. At one point in time, I was looking for applications to become a Mets fan. That's pathetic. That's sad, isn't it? But here's the deal. Here's what the Dodgers failed this season. LA failed in several areas, and it began way back a year ago in November. So almost 12 months ago. A long time ago. Their first failure was when the McCourts cheaped out and did not get a legitimate top-of-the-line ace starter. You don't grow ace starters. Nice try, Logan White. Nice try, Kim Ng. Nice try, Ned Colletti. You failed! You don't grow once-in-a-lifetime starters. Kershaw actually might be that guy, but he's too young. He cannot be that guy now. The Dodgers team was ready enough to have a real ace, and the Dodgers completely whiffed. And they had multiple chances to get this guy. Multiple chances. That's rare. Usually you get one, like in Johan Santana, which, by the way, ended up being overrated, so that was fine. I think that was probably a good thing they didn't go after it. But multiple chances. And it started way back in November. Dodgers had a legitimate chance to get CC Sabathia. There were no prospects involved. Didn't have to trade the farm. Didn't have to make special concessions a la Kevin Brown. You just had to put up or shut up. They didn't even try. I didn't even try. I mean, if you remember my podcast way back a year ago, actually, I started doing the podcast a year ago, but I did have some overtones about this. And I said, they didn't even try. They didn't even put up one offer on the table. And quite frankly, that killed them. Because the Yankees stepped in and put more money, and I think they put more money just to scare everybody else off. But the Dodgers didn't even try. They didn't even try to put a competitive offer for CC Sabathia. Did not try. And so, of course, there's no chance that anybody else was going to get him. Nobody really made a bid. The Yankees stepped in, $200 million. And he took it. Now look at the Yankees. That one move, among others, obviously Burnett was a help, really let all the other pieces fall into place for the Yankees' rotation. The Yankees finally got the one thing they desperately needed, stability in their pitching staff. And you would be surprised how that one move can really make a difference. The Dodgers had tremendous depth at their starting rotation. They did, but they had no top and they had no bottom. So it's a lot of middle. But they needed that top. They needed a guy to match up against every other postseason team in the history of baseball's ace. Every other team in the history of postseason baseball had an ace. This team didn't. And this team absolutely got crushed. I can't say I'm surprised. You can only go so long with that kind of ace by committee bull. No cursing on the show. I must refrain. We knew that Lowe had no chance. He was gone. Forget it. So we knew that was over. No chance at that. So Sabathia, why couldn't they have fielded a competitive offer for CC Sabathia? People were so hung up on Manny. And you know what? Now, it's easy to say this because it's 2020. There was no suspension then. The suspension kind of killed it. Now, that's kind of hard to really evaluate now. So I'm not even going to get into the whole, why did they worry so much about Manny? I mean, I think it made plenty of sense at the time. It's too easy to make that assessment now. But they should have gone after CC Sabathia. I mean, you could say, well, this team's so young. Was he really going to make that much of a difference? Well, if you look at what happened, yes. Now you just got to look on the other side of the country. New York Yankees are a step away from the postseason. Why? A big reason, because CC Sabathia. He dominated in his two starts. Now, I grant you that Lee, the man that the Phillies got, now this is going to lead me to my second point, so I'll get to that in a minute. So that was their first chance, CC Sabathia. They failed. Absolutely whiffed. Not even whiffed. This was like a guy standing at the plate and taking a called third strike on the outside corner. Low, kind of low, borderline. That's what the Dodgers did. They didn't even swing the bat. That aggravated me. But that was only the beginning. There were multiple opportunities to get that starting pitcher. Now, there wasn't going to be an ace anywhere near that kind of quality available for the LA Dodgers at the beginning of the season. But lo and behold, there was a trade deadline, and where everybody, even the good, loyal folks at Dodger thought that a trade for Roy Halladay was imminent, probable, and expected, Ned Colletti and company and Frank McCourt and Jamie McCourt did not comply. They didn't do it. And I don't even think they made any kind of a real trade offer. Maybe these token offers where they could put themselves in the headline for a minute. Didn't make a real offer. They were afraid to trade prospects, which, that is understandable. That really is. Truly understandable. But one thing that I thought was really interesting for the Dodgers over the course of the season and the offseason, a lot of the offseason pickups were actually pretty good. Orlando Hudson, excellent move. Good signing. And then later in the year, Ronnie Belliard, who I thought was a chuck, but the guy ended up being very, very good. I mean, very aggressive, but good hitter. And that was a good move. And some other moves were good. I think getting the move for George Sherrill, I mean, it's easy to say he sucks now because it's like two innings that he pitched in the LCS, and that's a little unfair, don't you think? You can't base it on two innings. Come on. But I thought that was a tremendous move. If he stays, that's a great move. If he doesn't, then wow, well, you gave up a lot for not a lot. Those were fine. But I just don't understand why they didn't make that move for a starting pitcher. So they didn't go after Halladay. And then that just passed. So Halliday stayed with Toronto at the end of the day. Just couldn't believe that. Now Halliday's already getting old, so that obviously wasn't going to be a big. That was going to be risky, I think. But for the course of that particular season, it might have been a good move to make, because Halliday had another year on top of that one, so Halliday would be good not just for that season, but for the next one. Wouldn't have been a bad play. You could let him go after the end of 2010, especially since he'd be reaching about 31 at that time. Past his prime, you could argue. So that was only part one. Part two, they had yet another chance to get a big-time starter. Cliff Lee may not have taken as much as it would have taken to get Roy Halladay. And we already know that the Dodgers have dealt with the Indians before when they got Casey Blake and traded Carlos Santana in the process. But my goodness, my God. Did not make a move for that either. Just kind of ignored it. And the Phillies swoop in and get him. Well, look at who's on top. The Phillies are on top because they got the guy they desperately needed to stabilize their pitching staff, because it was a mess before that. It was a complete mess. Imagine if they didn't make that move for Cliff Lee, where the Phillies would be right now. Probably not even in the playoffs. And you think I'm joking. I'm not. I think the Braves could have made a run. The Marlins could have made a run. The Phillies may not even have seen the postseason this year. That's how important that trade was. And the Dodgers failed again. So we ended up with no top of the line starters, no aces. People thought Billingsley was an ace. Well, that's a joke. That's a crime. Make it past 4.5 innings first before you start deciding that anyone's an ace. Good Lord. And while the Dodgers did get a very competitive pitching staff from top to bottom, from 1 to 5. They didn't get that lockdown ace. And they, you know what? That ace turned out to be the killer for them. Because an ace settles down a team if it starts to get into a rut. When there's a huge game and you just want to stay in it, the ace guarantees you that you will be in the game, period. There are very few pitchers that can do that. But for a team with this many resources and that kind of market, and those fans, that volume of fans... the tradition, the media coverage, all those resources and advantages at your disposal, there is no excuse for not getting any kind of an ace starter on your staff. Zero. And you had 3 chances to get this guy, and you whiffed on all 3. That is a disgrace. That is an absolute crime and an abomination. Cannot believe that. That, I think, is a big reason why the Dodgers couldn't show up here in the LCS in the end. And you got to give the Dodgers a lot of credit, because they did have a tremendous year. The fact that they made the postseason after battling so much adversity, losing Manny for 50 games, although, you know, when you think about it in the end, it kind of turns out that maybe him coming back might have actually been the worst thing that could have happened in that situation. He just was not the same hitter. I mean, he could adapt, but he just looks like an old hitter now. It really proved that he was on some kind of drug. Kind of sad, actually. And you know, that's not the end-all be-all in terms of Dodgers' struggles and when it counted the most. Rafael Furcal could not hit the entire year. People just kept thinking he'd come around. Oh, he's going to come around. He'll be back. He'll be back. He never came back, and I don't even think he was that good to begin with. But the thing about Furcal is that his defense is pretty good. Great, I would say. So he stays. He's got a fairly good contract. He stays even though he can't hit. The real problems for the Dodgers, on top of simply the lack of pop at the top of the rotation. When I say pop, I mean lack of dominant starter. The other half of the problem with the Dodgers has been guys to knock them home or people to help them at the top of the lineup. Furcal, for all his help and all his effort, does a remarkably terrible job as a leadoff hitter. Because he's got such a terrible hitting, he's so terrible at hitting now, he can't get on base. And that really kills the lineup. It's such an inefficient lineup. You know, people will say, well, you get the speedy guy at the top of the order. No, you don't. You get the guy that gets on base a lot on the top of the order. Speed helps, because speed gets you on base. But ultimately, you need a guy that can get on base to be your top of the order hitter. I think you eventually wind up getting the guy with the most speed because, again, when you're trying to knock in a run, you want the guy that comes in to be really quick. So obviously you're not going to put Bobby Abreu at the leadoff spot. That'll never happen. But you do want a guy that can get on base primarily and has speed. So together, those qualities work really well. But Rafael Furcal has not had that kind of quality in quite some time. He has been a mess. So I think what you really got to do, what they really needed to do over the course of the season, was drop him down in the lineup maybe to about the 6th or 7th spot. But they never did, because they just think about his reputation and not his actual performance. And that has killed me over the years with any of the teams I follow. And it's pretty consistent for all teams and all sports. But it still is frustrating. So that was a big problem. And then we come to Russell Martin. A guy who really doesn't have anything right now, except a face for the franchise. I mean, that's really literally it. Russell Martin has had probably the worst season of his career. He can't throw anybody out. He can't catch a ball. He lets balls go to the backstop. And he can't hit. And, you know, see, a lot of those other deficiencies were fine when he could hit. He can't hit. The guy's career is over. And honestly, I feel really bad for Russell Martin. Good guy, or at least he seems like it. And secondly, I really feel like, you know, whatever the powers that be, whether it was Torrey or Grady Little before him, really worked him too hard. And now that now it's too late. I mean, now he doesn't play as much as he used to, but it's too late. It is too late. All of his ability to hit has been worn out. They really wore him down like to the nub. And, you know, once you do that, there's no going back. They've reached the point of no return on Russell Martin. He's done. So I think they need to get another catcher now. So basically, no production from Furcal, no production from Martin, and very limited production from Casey Blake, although his defense has been pretty good. And finally, Manny Ramirez, the guy who had been their rock last 2 months of last season, first 2 months of this season, became a complete eyesore. And the fact is, he's basically turned into David Ortiz. He can't turn on fastballs anymore. You pitch him inside and he's done. His bat speed has really gone down to to nothing. And so when you look at that, you see what Manny's been up to. Yeah, he's in terrible shape. I mean, his career's finished. So at the end of the year, one third of your lineup couldn't hit. Don't you think that most teams are going to figure out a way to shut you down when an entire third of your lineup, one out of every three hitters, just automatically can't hit? It was bound to happen. This sort of thing was going to happen eventually. If they weren't going to lose to the Phillies, they probably would have gotten their butts kicked against the Yankees or the Angels or whoever they would have faced in the World Series. The Dodgers just simply had too many holes, I think, in the end to compete realistically for a World Series. Now, I know I didn't really make that assessment before, and I've always said that, you know, you don't have to hit to win in the postseason, but you combine that with the fact that a lot of their pitchers let them down, and the mere fact that, you know, a lot of these guys were kind of in a situation that they've never been in before. Kershaw kind of fits in that category, and I'm certain that, let's see. Well, Kuroda, I don't really remember pitching in the series last year, but I think he did. So he was, although he was coming off a rehab start. And we already know about Billingsley. Billings actually pitched, let's put that away. Anyway, it's a team that I think over the course of the season they realized is still young, is still inexperienced. Many of them are still about 26 or younger. Oh, I forgot about Loney. Loney is just such a... Oh, man, he's a frustrating guy to watch. He's like a singles hitter that happens to play first base, which is okay. Not bad, but... Man, I mean, he's just a little overrated as far as a hitter. I mean, he's just not that great. He has no power. I think that's the biggest problem with Loney. And he grounds into a lot of double plays. But I really... Yeah, I mean, you could have worse than James Loney. That's the other thing about it. But still, I mean, you end up with you always end up with the three automatic outs. This needs to be fixed. And so the reason the Dodgers have not come through in the postseason now 2 years in a row, besides the fact that the field is just that great and offensively, they really are. I mean, they'd have gotten 9 runs probably against any team. And I'm almost sure that they'll get at least 6 in a game against the New York Yankees. Now, I don't know if they'll win or lose, but they're going to get 6 runs. But besides that, the Dodgers just did not come to play. They're not ready for prime time. And that largely lies in their pitching staff, which just really wasn't there. And so the one thing that really let them down, though, wasn't so much the starters. It kind of was expected that the starters would implode. You can't expect guys like Vicente Padilla to do more than give up like 4 runs and chuck a couple of homers. That's just bound to happen after a while. He throws nothing but fastballs. So, I mean, after a while, someone's going to figure him out. It always happens. Kershaw's young. He had a great curveball, still does. But he's got some things to learn as well. And part of that, actually, believe it or not, is just getting experience. Just basically hanging around. And the reason I say that is because umpires don't give him the benefit of the doubt in the strike zone yet. But as he starts to pitch more and more, if he continues to use those great pitches that he has, he will eventually get those pitches on the corners. Just like Greg Maddux did and Glavin and many pitchers throughout the years. Pedro, I guess Randy Johnson. Oh, yeah. I mean, lots of these pitchers will get to those points as their reputation grows. Kershaw will be fine. Billingsley's kind of an interesting case. We've all banged on Billingsley because of how he's just come up so short when he's needed to use his guts to get through an inning, when he's needed to gut out an inning, when he's needed to outlast the other pitcher. He's failed on all those counts. But I feel like he's been hurt all year. I mean, we're going to find out probably for sure in the next 2 weeks. I think Billingsley's going to come back and he's going to be better than he was even this year. I think he's going to have a good year next year, so he's fine. So what you're missing then with the Dodgers is a big-time ace. They got to go after somebody. I don't think it's Halliday because they're not going to trade for him in the offseason. That wouldn't make sense. But somebody, they got to get somebody that can be their ace. Somebody. And that somebody's not Randy Wolf. And Wolf had a good year. Wolf was very good for them. But he's more of a 4-5 guy. Kuroda is a 4-5 guy. I would say Kershaw's a 2-3 guy. Billingsley's also a 2-3 guy. They need a 1. They don't have any 1s. And until they do, I don't think they're going to end up with the same problem. They could win the division. They could beat out the first round. But then they'll find their lumps in the LCS. Again, they need another starter. So I think in total, the Dodgers season has been very, very successful. Probably their best regular season, I would imagine, in about, since 2002. But when you really think about it, the team was definitely better than the 2002 team. Furthermore, I think that they still, even now, will have potential. But I don't know if they're going to really do much in the playoffs next season, but it depends on the moves that they make. They need to upgrade their top of the order in the lineup. They need to upgrade their top of the rotation. I think the bullpen will be okay, because Ned Colletti is usually pretty good at assembling bullpens. Broxton sucked last season in the playoff game that really counted. But really, when you think about it, he only pitched 1 game in the LCS. I don't think he's going to forget how to pitch. But somebody's going to have to teach him to throw 1 other pitch, or he is not going to last very long, period. So we'll see about that. So, I think that ends it for the Dodgers. they just need to get, they need to figure out a way to get better production out of the top of the lineup. They need to figure out how to get a legitimate starter at the top of the rotation. It'll take so much pressure off the other pitchers, and I think the pitching as a whole will improve dramatically, which has already performed pretty well. You know, the Dodgers did have one of the best ERAs, if not the best, in baseball. But it doesn't really amount to a whole lot when you face a legitimately tough team, tough lineup, and you have no stoppers. This is what happens. So it's another offseason for LA, and it should be another offseason for Anaheim coming up very soon. We'll see. I don't say hopefully. I mean, who knows what'll happen. And it's a win for the Phillies. Yeah, I can't get over how the Philadelphia Phillies are going to the World Series again. The team that lost 10,000 games. It's the kind of franchise you never would expect this kind of greatness out of. It's a very, very special team indeed. And amazing, a team with literally one starter. And maybe a couple of guys in their middle relief in their bullpen. Just crazy. I literally could not believe that the Phillies hit every single opportunity with guys on base for a home run. Even if you tried, you couldn't make the Phillies do that. It was just literally magic. But you got to give the Philly a lot of credit, and they've been there. They have the right mental mindset to get through these series. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the World Series? But this Philly lineup is definitely really, really special. And it can definitely make up for a lot of deficiencies. I mean, imagine if they were just half as good as they normally were. Probably win some of these games still. Probably could win the series. But it really masks a lot of problems that the Philadelphia Phillies have. And they really have no rotation. Hamels did not pitch that great tonight. He got away with it because he had such a big lead. But personally, if the game was closer, you know, he would have had a really tough night. And as it was, he had a tough night. He didn't make it past 4 2/3 innings. So he's definitely on the downside right now. Now, he could come back because I think he was hurt this year. After that, it's a mess. Plan's not that great. Moyer obviously couldn't pitch the rest of the year. Brett Myers is a puke anyway. He's a chuck. Pedro Martinez, well, yeah, nice seeing you, but I think he's not going to make it to next year. And that leaves Cole Hamels, who, again, had it very tough, but, you know, he could come back. Finally, you have Cliff Lee, the guy. The guy. Amazingly, right? Nobody thought that he was going to be the guy, the ace, but he has. He's really performed amazingly well this season. And hats off to Ruben Amaro for making the trade for him. He just struck when the iron was hot. I think that's the key. That is the theme of the entire Phillies season this year. The general manager struck when the iron was hot. They let an aging Pat Burrell go, lifetime Philly, right? And while that was tough emotionally for the fans, they went after a guy who was much better, Raul Ibanez. Now, they got a little lucky because Ibanez was not having a good stretch in his career, but he performed really well, and I think a lot of that had to do with the Citizens Bank Park dimensions, but still, he had a very good year. And they struck when the iron was hot, getting the guy they needed for their rotation to help them ease up a little bit. That was Cliff Lee. They gave up a lot for Cliff Lee. Prospects, I'm sure, all kinds of guys. But they knew they had something special. And it didn't look like it at the time. It didn't seem like the Phillies were playing very good baseball. It took them forever to clinch that National League East. But you got to give them a lot of credit. They found the right matchups, and they exploited them to the bone. That was beautiful. So the Phillies are not in the World Series. They faced, well, we'll see who they face. We don't know yet, but they should face the Yankees, providing that they do not collapse tonight. And that will be the fun of baseball going forward. So, wow, we got fun. This is just a thrilling thing. So now that we've kind of gone over the little details of it, that now that we've finished up off rattling the facts, now let me get into the feelings of this discussion. Boy, do I hate the Phillies! I hate these guys so much. Victorino is the biggest bitch crybaby I've ever seen in my life. That guy, even his face, man, it just makes you want to punch him in the face. And I think he does it because, you know, he revels in it. He knows he's being a jackass the whole time. He knows it. I mean, that's what makes him a genuine icon. This guy is a fool. And the guy has got no shame. He leans into the plate to take pitches. Honestly, and then the one time he gets a pitch thrown at his head, and he starts complaining. Clearly not a purpose pitch. This was last year. What a baby. What a baby. He wouldn't have been as big a baby if he had a bib on. Or he couldn't have been a bigger baby if he had a bib on. Cannot stand that guy. Shall I go on? Yes. How about Jason Worthless? He does nothing in his season maybe he had a good 2004 with LA. Breaks his wrist. He has a tough time. All of a sudden, he comes back and becomes a world beater? What the hell? That stupid ballpark has revived many careers. Good Lord. Pedro Martinez. Now, I don't necessarily hate the guy. But I do find it very thrilling that he is gravy training the Phillies to a world championship. Unbelievable. Brett Myers, I can't comment on because he didn't really factor into the postseason this year, so he's excluded. Let's see, anybody else? Brent Lidge seems like a hick up there on the mound. He was definitely a true Astro. A true Astro. He looked like an Astro, pitched like an Astro, acted like an Astro. He was an Astro. Now he's pitching for the Phils. The guy is not only a chuck, but man, he is annoying. He got that stupid goatee. This guy's just ridiculous. Pedro Feliz. Good fielder, good guy. I'm not going to get into him. But how about Carlos Ruiz? He looks like, what's up, Jackie? What's up? And here's a guy that really just is just not that great. But he can hit the fastball, and that's exactly what he did in the postseason. How does it end up being like the world's greatest hitter? How does it end up being A-Rod against the Dodgers? That never made sense to me. Just bizarre. Cole Hamels is a bit of a chuck too, although he's hurt. But the guy has just got such an attitude. He's like, ooh, look at me. Look how great I can pitch. Oh, good Lord. Good Lord. Sit down. Go back to San Diego. Oh, unreal. Ugh. Now, I've gone through the people I can't stand on this team. And Charlie Manuel's among them, but he's actually a pretty nice guy. But I just can't believe how much luck he's run into. This guy is not a good manager. It's amazing. I hate when people say that Charlie Manuel outmanaged Joe Torre, but, you know, it's pathetic, but it's true. He really did. And he didn't do anything. He really didn't do that much to do so. Joe Torre undid his own team. It was ridiculous. It's crazy. But obviously, I'm not going to turn against Joe Torre because he still got us here, right? Joe Torre is a good manager. People don't want to say that, but he really is. Two back-to-back postseason appearances. It's not his fault his team couldn't perform. That's not on him. It's not his fault that his baseball team couldn't get a single hit with guys in scoring position during the entire series. Or when they did get a home run, there's nobody on base. And they would score a run when the game was out of hand already. Yeah, good job. Real achievement. You got a run when you're already down by six runs. Good job. That's not Joe Torre's fault. It's not Joe Torre's fault that his apparently greatest pitcher, greatest reliever, cowers in fear of a 95-year-old Matt Stairs who farts on the bench and does nothing the whole game. He just stands there with his big fat ass and farts on the bench during the between innings. You can't interfere with that guy. You are a chuck. That's what Broxton was on Monday night. Joe Torre can't control that. Joe Torre can't help the fact that Broxton has no pitches and no stuff and only a fastball. And then basically if you locate it, then you win. And if you can't, he loses. He can't control the fact that Broxton can't pitch a lick outside of his home territory against inferior pitchers in the bottom of the order. Joe Torre can't control that. And don't give me the whole, well, Broxton never gives a home run. Well, fine. He'll give up like three walks and he'll give up an extra base hit double. Clears the bases. It's just as bad, people. Broxton is so friggin' overrated. I can't even believe it. This guy's a complete jackass when it comes to closing in important games. He's basically what I've derived from his performances this year at a statistical analysis is that he can win when he's got the home crowd and he's got a pretty sizable advantage. But he can't win when it's a pressure situation on the road with base runners. That's what a closer is. You can't do that, then you're not a closer. Go back to the eighth inning, you chuck. Good Lord, I spent 41 minutes on Dodgers. But anyway, I can't even remember where I was. Charlie Manuel is... It's amazing that he outmanaged Joe Torre, but he really did. And he did it by not doing much. I mean, he just pretty much went with his own game plan. He trusted in his own players, and he succeeded by simply not doing too much. Got to give him credit. He knew his weaknesses and his strengths. And he said, we're just going to let the other manager blow up for him. Blow up for his own team, I mean. Well played. All right. All right, we have Jacob Rosales joining us here in the city. You know, this NLCS, I hate to harp on this since it was only game played last night, but I have never seen any performance by a team of mine where we were so thoroughly embarrassed and kicked around and beaten and just, I've never seen anybody beaten that badly every single game, basically, for an entire series. I've never seen it happen to any of the teams that I've watched. I've never seen it. I mean, even like, even for example, in situations like, let's say when the Lakers get swept by the Spurs in the playoffs, I would imagine that one of those games was pretty close. Like they lost one of them by 2 points. Really, the Dodgers were just got their ass kicked the entire way. And the game they won, they probably should have lost that too. It's remarkable. I mean, I don't know. What do you think of that, Jake?
You obviously haven't been a Steelers fan that long, so. So I don't know if you remember the early 90s, the Steelers day. It was a pretty rough time. So it could be worse. Trying to show you some goodness in this. Hey, at least you guys made the playoffs. And yeah, I mean, really, you guys are one big, I think, arm away from being. I mean, obviously, you guys are already a pretty good team, but I mean, a team that can actually win the World Series. You guys are one big arm, two big arms, and maybe a leadoff guy now, because I don't know if they're called to keep doing what he's doing. From being a team that could be a favorite to win the World Series. Of course, that's not easy to think, so, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. It's hard to adjust what these things are from year to year, but I think the more you think about it, though, the more you realize that there is a lot of good pieces in place. Kemp is good, Ethier is good. The two things that I think you have to address most. Now, you mentioned Furcal. He can't be a leadoff guy anymore, but he can still play. I think he's got tremendous defense.
No, there's no doubt about that. I agree with that, but I think you'd rather have a guy like that, like 7th or 8th in your lineup, you know. Not first. Not a leadoff guy. He's not a leadoff guy anymore, and that's the reality of it. I mean, I'm not saying, like, Orlando Hudson should be or anything like that, but you get my point. Right?
Yeah, but one of the problems with this though, and looking for a leadoff guy, who are you going to get? But we'll get to that later.
No. Well, and that's also kind of the thing about getting a big arm, too. I mean, you got Lackey, who's available, I think. Is he the free agent? Am I right about that?
He could be, but I don't know if I'd really want him. He's
I think he is a free agent, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, you have Halliday, who's out there. I mean, he's floating around. He's not available, obviously, but Toronto obviously tried to trade him. So there's a chance there. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I mean, really, like, do you really think about this? If this, Kershaw could rebound from this postseason, and Kuroda was healthy. You know, you get another big arm, you might have something there. You know, I'm sure you could find a number four and Wolf. I'm not going to bank on those guys being number fours next year, but they could be, or somebody else. You know what I mean? So I really feel like you guys are not that far away from. I mean, really, you're not that far away. You're three wins away from being in the World Series, so, which is more than you could say than anybody but the Angels.
Absolutely. You know, it's the funniest thing. I think more important than the leadoff guy, I mean, and don't forget, Martin's an automatic out, so that's going to have to be addressed too. They need another catcher. Loney's kind of ridiculous at first base, but I mean, I think it's acceptable.
You can afford to have a catcher like that, though. You can afford to have a bad bat in any of your midfield infielders. You just can't have him at your leadoff position and be bad. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. So let's go back to the starter. Let's go back to starters. It is clear that the Dodgers, because they're so cheap, they couldn't get CC.
They couldn't trade for Halliday. Don't start saying that they're cheap. Okay, come on. Let's really start looking at their payroll. They're not cheap. Come on, man. Give me a break on this. But let's not forget their contract, like Andrew Jones. Like, forget the money that they paid Manny Ramirez. They're not cheap. Stop it. Stop it.
Well,
they're not cheap. I get your point. I know where you're going with this. I'll let you finish, though, but I know where you're going with this. Go ahead.
Well, having said that, now that we see that what we've gotten from the other starters, now we have an idea of where is Kershaw going to end up? What's his ceiling? You know what? You realize, wow, his ceiling's pretty high. And Billingsley, you know, as bad as he finished down the stretch, he never did get that win after August 18th. I still think he's going to be pretty good next year. And I think the problem was this year, he kind of was some kind of nagging injuries. Next year, he'll be healthier and more experienced.
He could be a number four. He was never going to be your number one guy.
I didn't say that.
I said that at the beginning of the season, he was going to fall apart. You could see it. He's just that type of guy. He could be a number four, though, certainly. I mean, I could see that, or maybe even a number three. I mean, that's a possibility. And I know where you were going with the whole CC Sabathia thing. There was no way he was going to sign in L.A. There was just no way. He was going to sign with the Giants before he was going to sign in L.A.
I don't know about that. If they put up a good offer, about $180 million, he might have gone for it.
I really don't think he would sign in L.A. I think he was either going to go back to the Bay Area, and I think New York actually convinced him otherwise. I really think that he was going to go to – I think his initial number one choice was go to the Bay Area, and the Giants gave him a good deal. Now, if the Giants weren't in the picture at all, I think he would have had to go to L.A. to stay on the West Coast, or to go to the West Coast, back to the West Coast to stay. But I think he won area and credit Cashman and the Yankees for selling him on going to New York, and there's no way the Giants could contend with the kind of prices that they were giving him. And he wasn't going to go to Oakland, so that's a gift.
Gotcha. So what if...
Do you get my point, though? Like, if San Francisco was not in the picture, the Dodgers certainly could have had a chance to sign Sabathia.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Now, what do you make of Cliff Lee, though? I mean, this is the guy that ended up helping the Phillies. Now, maybe not in this particular series. He only pitched once. But when you think about it, Philly ended up getting this trade for Lee. They did give up a lot. Could the Dodgers have made that same move, and would the results be different?
I don't think the Dodgers could have matched what the Phillies gave up. I mean, the two guys that the Phillies gave up, they really coveted those guys. And they previously thought them not be tradable. I don't really know who the Dodgers have in the organization that would be that kind of caliber that Cleveland would have went for, to be honest with you. So.
That's one way to look at it. But, well, now that, I mean, sometimes that can be a curse trying to protect your prospects too much. One thing, what I was thinking about the Phillies just now, as I noted in the podcast, is that they really struck when the iron was hot. And you got to give Ruben Amaro Jr. a lot of credit for recognizing that, wow, this is the year. this is the chance. We're going to have to make this chance. Let's do it. And he did, and it really worked out really well for him.
Well, absolutely. And the other side of it is that is it going to be enough to have him push him over the edge of the World Series? I don't think so, to be honest with you. He's been a great asset to them, and I think he'll do fine. But Hamels is not, he's not there. He's something's wrong with Hamels. The time they took him out of the game, it's just like, it's just unusual. He only pitched, 4 2/3 innings just today? Something like that. The other day, he only pitched, you didn't do well, and he only pitched a few innings as well. Like, Hamels is not on his game, that's for sure. If they're going to depend on Pedro Martinez, I'm a little bit suspect of that. Or who's the other guy not Hamels, but the other guy that pitches to them. I don't think that they have the rotation to get through the Yankees. When they faced the Yankees earlier in the season, it was May, and they ended up winning the series 2-3, dominated one of the games, by the way. But this is a different Yankees team. It's a very different ball club now, and I just think that the Yankees, it's not enough. But to get them to to win the NL, it certainly was a great move. You've got to think that it puts them in position. They're 4 games away from winning the World Series. It ended up being a great trade to get the lead. When I think a lot of people at the time, I wouldn't say mixed, it was one side or the other. I think most people either thought this is a great move or this is a god-awful move. What were they thinking? Lee's not going to be what he was last year, da-da-da-da-da. You know, it was one or the other. And I think it's definitely, you could say it was a good move because they don't win. I don't even know if they get out of the first round without Lee, so.
Yep. Nope. Yeah, I think that's right because, it's amazing what an ace can do to really turn your season around and turn your pitching rotation around. Everything else falls into place. And you know this. You've seen Lincecum do this. Lincecum really makes that pitching staff more stable. It gives them a sense of leadership. The ace of a rotation is very rare, and that's what makes him very valuable. Very few teams have these kind of special pitchers.
Absolutely. And the Giants are actually lucky to have 2 aces, really, to be honest with you. Last season, anyway.
Yeah.
And that's why they were in the playoff hunt and at the time that they were mid-August, really? I never thought that they'd be in the playoff hunt for the season, but they had Kane finally really have a true breakout year that we've been all waiting for as Giants fans. And Timmy being Timmy, and they've just been absolutely phenomenal, those two guys. Tim Lincecum had that streak going for a while where he would never lose after the Giants lost. The day after the Giants lost, and that's just the kind of pitcher that he is. So, even though he was a little jumpy in the All-Star game, he certainly, he proved that he's definitely a clutch guy. Those kind of guys make a difference. It's funny, as Giants fans, we've experienced both opposites. We've seen what an ace, what a true ace, a dominant pitcher can do, what a couple dominant pitchers could do. And we've also seen what a dominant hitter can do. How much it can change a lineup, something that you see in Ryan Howard all throughout this playoffs, something that you see Manny Ramirez do last year for the Dodgers, and really do for the better part of the season when he was in there. It's funny, there's one guy on ESPN who's actually saying that he thinks that Manny Ramirez is hurt, and I don't know if that's the case, but he certainly doesn't look the same right now. Either way, just bring back to the series, Ryan Howard, won the whole playoffs, Ryan Howard has been that guy for the Phillies. And he's completely changed that lineup. He is he's the MVP right now of that team. They're not in the World Series without him either. Lee and Howard have been the reasons why they're there. So, credit them. Credit Howard. You're really a guy who's taken a lot of heat for not being not being patient at the plate, striking out too much, and all he's got is a home run ball. Turns out he's a little bit more than that. He's a lot more dangerous than that, especially in the postseason. At least this year, anyway. So, credit him for that as well.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. So, looking ahead now to a probable World Series matchup with the New York Yankees. Let's assume the Yankees make it. I'm not. Obviously, this is pending, subject to change. But let's say they make it. Do you see the Yankees as a team that has grown together over the course of a single season? Like, have you seen a transformation from just another team?
They're a completely different team. They're a completely different team than what we've seen in previous years. The chemistry's there. And we all know, chemistry probably means a lot less in baseball than it does in other sports, but it still means something. you know, a lot of the reasons why a lot of people were rooting for the Boston Red Sox during that year that they won the World Series, it wasn't just the fact that the Yankees were playing them. It had a lot to do with the fact that they were a fun team to watch. They legitimately seemed to enjoy each other. They legitimately seemed to enjoy playing baseball. And they had that kind of rough around the edge, you know, kind of style. This Yankees team, obviously, they got, you know, the shave, you know, they can't wear beards and they don't have long hair and they don't have all that kind of style. But that's more because that's what the organization wants them to look like. But they certainly look loose. They look excited. And they also, at the same time, not only they look like they're having fun and they're excited, they also look very serious, like they're business-like. You know, A-Rod looks like he's a businessman right now. He's not playing the little, you know, game that he usually does. He looks like a businessman out there, but he also looks like he's enjoying himself. And we haven't seen that from the Yankees in, we haven't seen that from the Yankees for at least a decade. So,
yeah,
you know, it's interesting to see that, you know, to see a team like that. And that's, they're fun to watch. I don't want to see the Angels in the World Series because they're a boring baseball team. I want to see the Yankees play the Phillies. Because that'll actually be, to me, an exciting series. It'll be fun to watch because the Yankees are fun to watch. There's no question about it. I mean, it really depends on, I think, whatever happens within this matchup. Can Sabathia and Burnett really keep up what they're doing? If those guys can continue what they're doing, I think that they will certainly, they're going up against a very tough lineup, that's for sure. But if they can continue to do what they're doing, I just don't think the Yankees they're just not beatable with the way the lineup is hitting. They're deep. 1 through 9, they're deep. So even if one or two guys are having a cold night, it doesn't matter if they got 7 or 6 other guys that are hot all at once. I just don't think that anybody can stop their hitting. So what are they going to have to take? You're going to have to get the CeCe. You're going to have to get the Burnett. You're going to have to get the Mariano Rivera. I don't really think the Phillies know how to do that. So, just my opinion.
You know, you raised a very interesting point about this Yankees team. It's the most... I should mention that this is the best team I think I've seen in at least 5 years. I would say 10 years, too. And while it's probably more talented, I would say, than the 1990s teams, they also have the same level of cohesion, as you noted, that these late 90s teams had. They are a veteran team, but they are also veterans plus a mix of youth. They are speed and power. Is this not the most balanced lineup that you've seen of the Yankees in the last 20 years? Well, not the single most, but one of.
Yeah, I mean, they got a lot of guys who can work the counts. They got a lot of guys that are willing to actually, you know, not necessarily just try to... It's interesting, a lot of the problems that the Yankees had throughout that time was that, you know, if they had a guy on first, and nobody's putting a bunt down, nobody's trying to push the guy to second, they're going to try to swing. And you actually have a team that can do both of that now. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So, before it was just power hitter after power hitter after power hitter. Guy was going to pound the ball, not really going to work the count. Now they got guys who are patient at the plate, and they got guys who are just free swinging. It's a very balanced lineup. It's tough for a pitcher to adjust to these kind of guys because, you know, those kind of guys really, you know, the guys that can work the counts, those guys matter in baseball. You know, the Todd Eltons of the world, the Rockies aren't in the playoffs without Todd Elton, in my opinion, as well. Guys who are patient, play, make the pitchers work, they finally have that in New York. And, you know, I know you were never a big fan of Teixeira, but...
I was getting to that. I was saving that. I was saving that.
Give the guy a lot of credit for that lineup as
Absolutely.
Well. You know, and I know you have recently, but at the beginning of the season, you just thought this guy's overrated. And he is a bit overrated, but at the same time, he certainly is. You've got to give his credit for what he's done with the Yankee team. You know, because he's been that. But to me, I think he's been the difference maker outside of the pitching, obviously, Sabathia and Burnett and all that. Outside of that, like, their lineup, I think the difference has been, you know, Teixeira. You have to give him that kind of credit. And, I mean, also getting guys like Nick Swisher. I mean, really, like, you really wouldn't expect it, but it's true. Like, those kind of guys matter for some reason. The guy's not going to do anything next season and probably never ever again in his baseball career, but for some reason, he's just having those moments. And we saw that, you know, with every World Series team has that one guy where you're going, where did that come from? And he never really does it again. It's weird, but he's that guy this year, and there's a couple other guys on that team that, even Melky's playing all right, you know? I mean, that's something. Even he's still Melky, but he's something every now and then, and that's shocking to me, considering that I always thought Melky Cabrera was very, very overrated, and I think a lot of people begin to agree with me on that after a while.
I'm with you on that. Now, let's go back to Teixeira for a minute. You know what? I have to admit, when he has really found his niche in that lineup. Now, I believe he's probably the fourth or fifth guy in the lineup, but you know what? He is fitting in really well, and you got to give Teixeira a lot of credit for not folding under the pressure. And this is underrated of him, because it would have been so easy for him to fold under with all the media hype and all the pressure and the big market. This is his first chance to play for a really big time team. And I'm sorry, the Angels don't count. Neither do the Braves. But and he's really excelled very, very well. I got to give him a lot of credit.
I'm with you on that. I think that he's been a big difference maker in that lineup. Not necessarily, you know, I mean, obviously the at-bats and the numbers and all that stuff, but I'm talking more about, you know, his style of play. You know, before, the Yankees they seemed like robots. That's, I think, the difference that he's brought. He's not that kind of player. You know what I mean? You know, they all seem like a blue. Who's that one guy that plays for Boston, played for L.A.? Nobody. Oh, gosh.
Well, seems like no, it can't be Lowe, because that wouldn't make sense. Are you thinking of played for Boston and L.A.?
He plays for Boston, played for L.A. for a while. J.D. Drew. J.D. Drew.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
They all seem like kind of J.D. Drew type players. Like, they don't give a shit. They're just out there playing baseball because it's their job and they get paid a lot of money. Outside of Jeter and Matsui, none of them really seem like they had any personality, you know what I mean? Including A-Rod. He did seem like he had a personality, which is a very weird one. And he seemed to have really loosened up since Teixeira showed up. As far as their pitching staff is concerned, obviously, you know, getting Burnett and him staying healthy, and Sabathia really, you know, being a phenomenal, you know, not just an ace, but a guy who can eat innings. Now, I mean, who knows what happens going on next season, but ride the horse right now, because, damn it, he's going to take you to the World Series right now. He's going to probably win you the World Series. And we've seen Sabathia do this. We've seen him stretch his arm out. And you're just kind of wondering, when's he going to break down? And I feel like, because everybody around him is better than when he was in Cleveland, than when he was in Milwaukee, that eventually that's going to take precedence. The fact that he knows he's got a lineup that can back him up now. Not to say he didn't have that in Milwaukee, but let's be honest here, that wasn't a very good baseball team, and he was the only guy on that staff outside of Gallardo who was a guy who had never started until that season, late in the season. He's the kid, so you're just not gonna carry a staff like that. Does that make sense?
Certainly. Certainly.
There's no Mariano Rivera at the end. There's no Burnett the next day. You know, I feel like he's riding that momentum himself. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I really think that is probably the case. Like it does something to pitchers and to hitters when the pitchers are not pitching well, and they're not going to go out there and have the same enthusiasm. You know, when the hitters are hitting well or they're not hitting well, the pitchers aren't going to go out there and go, well, shit, man, what's the point of me giving? What? You can see it in their body language that they're throwing their arms out to try to win games. And trust me, as a Giants fan, we see this all the time. When the lineup doesn't hit the ball, it sucks for the pitchers to go out there and continue, you know, throwing innings into the eighth inning and be tied, be 1-0. You know, and you as a pitcher, I can't imagine how frustrating that could be, you know, to pitch 8, 9, you know, 7 innings and give up only 1 run, 2 runs, no runs, and your team isn't winning the game, or it's tied, or you're barely winning. Like, I can't imagine what that's like. And not to do it, you know, every now and then, that's fine, but to do it every night, basically. Imagine the opposite of that, where, you know, your team, your lineup's giving you comfortable leads, and you know that they're going to come in. Like, at any point, they can come on, and they can score 6, 7 runs in an inning. That's going to make you feel good as a pitcher. It's going to make you feel more relaxed. It's going to make you focus more and just do your job. So I think that it's all around that. That's why we're like where the Yankees are going right now.
Well said. So, you know, we'll have a formal preview of the World Series coming up. It's not starting until Wednesday. But we'll end it, end baseball thoughts for now. Jake, I had one last thing I wanted to I was wondering about as we switch gears to the NFL for a moment. I wanted to know what your initial thoughts were for Week 7. I will give you the complete floor on this. So, what do you got in Week 7?
What do I got in Week 7?
Yeah, what are your thoughts? What's on your mind?
I'm mostly thinking about the 49ers after the big loss that they had. I'm sorry, I'm going to probably turn this into a 49ers conversation, but to be honest, that's on my mind. After the big loss, the bye week, Crabtree's supposed to start. They switched up their line. Pashos is now right tackle. Anyway, we'll get into all the details. Apparently, you know, Brandon Jones isn't happy as a receiver because Crabtree's starting. I don't know how true that is. Pro Football Talk claims that that's the case, but they're more like TMZ practically, so who knows whether they're telling the truth or not. This is a big game for the Niners, and I don't just think it's a big game as far as playoff implications, as far as division. They really need this win for confidence. They really need this win to give them this idea that, you know what, we had a bad game against Atlanta, and that was all it was just a bad game. We can get beyond this. They need to win badly for themselves, or they at least need to play well. And really, I mean, you know, the GM and Singletary, they need Crabtree to play well. They really need Crabtree to play well. If they're going to start it, they really need him to play well because it's going to extremely hurt their credibility if he doesn't. The fact that, and maybe not necessarily this Sunday, but he needs to improve and he needs to make it an impact since they decided to start. If they didn't do that, the pressure wouldn't be on him to do that. But it really is at this point. Now, all the talk is that he's the real deal, that he can create separation, he can get off the line like, you know, an elite receiver can. He's got good hands. Everybody's saying that he's the real deal. Is it going to translate to the football field with this line and this quarterback? Maybe not. That's the reality of it. Unfortunately, Crabtree and Sean Hills, that both their, shall we say, their fates are intertwined. And that's maybe not a good thing for Crabtree. Because Sean Hill, for all his pros, he's got a lot of cons, and his cons are pretty, pretty big. And they don't really match up to being a starting quarterback in the NFL. And I really like Sean Hill. I really do. I think he's been, you know, great for the 49ers for the time that he's been there. But he's just not a starting quarterback. His tools just aren't there. But hey, you know what? They're a very young team. They got a rookie. Really, in reality, they got a rookie coach, and we'll see where they go from there. But this week's a big week for them. So that's what's on my mind this week.
Tell us if you see a upset in the offing from any of these teams this week, and I'll give you some of the matchups if you don't have the schedule on you. But for instance, a big upset in the offing, so like something like akin to like St. Louis beating somebody, you know, something like that.
Let me actually pull it up. You're giving to me though. You're giving to me right now, but let me pull it up real fast. I have it here. Let's see, Week 7. Well, you know, just starting off with the morning games. The Minnesota, you know, Pittsburgh game is a big game, obviously. Minnesota is, you know, won a couple of games that a lot of people don't think they deserve to win, including myself. But hey, it is what it is. Pittsburgh, you know, if they can go and beat Minnesota in Minnesota, they're still a team to reckon with. If they go and lose to Minnesota, and it's like, well, kind of where we thought they would be. We'll see what happens, kind of thing. You know what I mean? Because Pittsburgh really, you know, we expect them to be good, but we also go, well, they're the Super Bowl champion, so whatever. It's tough to repeat in this league. We already talked about the Niners in Houston. the only other game in that morning time that really I feel like, yeah, well, it could be interesting is Green Bay and Cleveland. I know that sounds crazy, but Green Bay's really, you know, they beat up on a bad team last week, and can they beat up on a bad team again this week? Can they get that momentum going and maybe contend for the NFC North? We'll see. Afternoon games, what do we got? What are the afternoon games? Do you have let me see. Atlanta and Dallas, I think, is actually a little bit interesting to me. I wouldn't be surprised if Dallas can actually maybe pull off an upset there, to be honest with you. I still don't think they're a very good football team, but Atlanta seems to be playing. They haven't been that solid, but they've also been, they haven't been great, but they've been solid. Does that make sense? Like, they haven't been phenomenal. You're not sitting there just going, wow, Atlanta's so great, because it's pretty much the same team that they were last year. You got Tony Gonzalez. I can see them maybe dropping a game they shouldn't have dropped. And then the Cincinnati-Chicago game, I think, will be really fun to watch, actually. And there's an interesting element there with Cedric Benson. That's, we'll see if he comes out against Chicago. He may want to go and beat up on his team. I don't know. That's pretty much all I got with that. Any upsets? Arizona over the Giants. That's really my only upset that I could see happening, which may not be much of an upset.
Wow, and picking Arizona to beat the Giants. But you know what? I can see that. And I'll tell you why. Because
That's good.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you're going to say what I'm going to say. Giants secondary is just not that great.
Yeah, their secondary has just been absolutely awful. Granted, a lot of teams have been able to get to Kurt Warner, and really not exactly a mobile quarterback. But the Arizona, you know, their defense is a lot better than people think. They got a great athlete in the secondary, and they got a great front four. Their defensive line really shoots the gaps well. They really put pressure. They can really stop the run. There's a reason why they went to the Super Bowl. They really do have that kind of defense that can get on a roll. And obviously they can score points. They haven't really shown much of it this year, but they can certainly score points. I won't be surprised if they beat the Giants. I don't think it's going to happen, but there's a possibility of an upset. The other upset that I think could be possible, just because it's kind of out of nowhere, running team in Miami, who knows, maybe they can go in and play well at home. Maybe they could beat New Orleans. I doubt it. Really, really doubt it. That would be my definitely, probably won't happen, but you know what, let's see how well New Orleans plays against a team that can run the football at home, you know, on the road like that. Does that make sense?
You know what, I've been pegging that game. That game is going to really surprise, it's going to open a lot of eyes. That game is going to open some eyes. I mean, people are like, oh, New Orleans, they're the best team in the NFC. They're going to dominate that Miami Dolphins. No, they're not. It's going to be a tough game. It's going to come down to a field goal.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if they'll, you know, I don't know. And the thing is I could see New Orleans going in and just completely dominating. If they go in and dominate Miami, they're absolutely for real, in my opinion. And I don't mean like they're for real like we've been saying last week, like, oh, well, maybe they can go to the Super Bowl. Like, no, they're completely for real. They're the best team in football if they go and beat Miami. And I mean beat up on Miami. If Miami sticks around with them, then, you know, it's the NFL. I mean, shit, that happens. And we're just going to shrug our shoulders and go, well, we'll see what happens next week. You know, if Miami beats New Orleans, then obviously it's going to turn some heads. Miami can certainly do it, too. You know, they have their try to make not a lot of mistakes, run the football. They got that whole – they're the only really team that's been successful, whatever that thing's called again, that offense with the running back running the football, whatever. Anyways. And you know, their defense, they got some headhunters on defense, so we'll see. I mean, I could see them give them a run, and if they do that, then New Orleans is pretty much like every other good team, elite team in the NFL the last few years. Very, very vulnerable. If this isn't the 80s. It's not the 70s. There just isn't those dynasties anymore, so it is what it is.
You know what? This is unrelated, but not a game I'm going to keep my eye on this week. St. Louis hosting the Colts. And people are just going to completely overlook that game. They'll be like, oh, man, jeez, look how bad they are. Look how good the Colts are. But you know what? I'm just going to keep an eye on it. And if that thing gets close, oh, am I going to be excited? Oh, could you imagine the glee in my mouth, in my voice, If the Rams could go up there and beat the Indianapolis Colts coming off a bye week, would that not just be the greatest upset of the year?
Probably. I mean, I don't think there's any question.
I'm going to keep my eye on that. Keep my eye on that game. I will. I probably am not going to get to. I'm not going to see much. I'm probably. It's going to be like a big old blowout for Indianapolis. But just in case. I mean, just in case it gets interesting, I am going to be all over that game. I mean, would you be surprised if St. Louis beat the Colts?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? I think they're going to get their ass kicked.
Oh, man, I cannot wait. I cannot wait. All right, man. Well, Jake, thanks again for joining us. Thanks for your big preview. That was really nice. And
you mean you don't want to talk about, you know, Jeff Fisher donning a Peyton Manning jersey and saying, I just wanted to feel like a winner?
That's funny. But I almost did, actually, which is kind of strange. I was talking about the Colts just now, and then I saw that image on ESPN, and crazily enough, I felt like, wow, could that get in the Colts' heads? Could they end up, you know, overlooking the Rams? Because that could happen. They could overlook a team. They could be looking ahead. And that happens in the NFL, too. That's the part of the reason why I thought this game could be more interesting than we realized. But, I mean, you never know. You never know. So, the short answer to your question, no. But otherwise, it's interesting.
I don't care. Whatever. You know, I mean, if Mike Singletary wore a Rams jersey and said, I wanted to feel like a winner, I think we'd all just laugh. But, well, I'm sure a lot of 49ers fans would be very, very upset. It's like a lot of Titans fans are very, very upset. But it is. I mean, it's just, this is the moments where you have to go, it's a business. This isn't real life. This isn't like, you know, you weren't pledging allegiance to our country or liberty or justice or freedom or anything like that. It's just football. Let's have some fun with it. It's okay.
Yeah, fun is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with fun. And that's what we'll be expecting this weekend here in the NFL. And I think that's all we have for now. Thanks, Jake. It's good to hear from you again.
Dave, you have a good evening, man.
All right. You too. Well, that'll do it here for everybody here in the city. Hope you have a wonderful day. We'll be back with it again real soon. But until then, we'll see you next time.